Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Do you know that orange peels can help boost heart health by modifying your gut microbiota? So says a study from University of Florida, published in the U.S. Agriculture and Food Sciences Initiative. We have about 12 studies we're going to be sharing with you today, always some peer-reviewed literature. Then I'm going to share a commentary from Chris Hedges from Truthdig, The Impeachment's Moral Hypocrisy. Also today, for those of you who've been watching the news on this, we're now told, according to a series of reports from the Washington Post, that the military knew all along that everything we were saying about Afghanistan and our legitimating why we should be there were lies, that there was no real reason for us to be there, except for trillions of dollars in minerals, but no good reason. And it's the longest war in American history. So now that that information is out and widely disseminated, and no one's taking responsibility, and no one has been fired, no one's been demoted, yet the evidence is there that everyone lied to us. George Bush lied, Obama lied, Clinton lied, everybody lied. So guess what they did? So after blowing $3 trillion on lies in Afghanistan, Congress just authorized a trillion more for this coming year. What does that tell you about Congress, left and right? So we're going to deal with that on today's program. Also today, we're going to take a look at some of the issues that we don't get enough insight in, including a new series that I'm doing of insiders within the medical industrial complex, challenging those areas of medicine that deserve to be challenged and deserve to be changed. Now, there are parts of medicine that work, that are exemplary. There are drugs that make a difference, that save lives, and can help us. But that's only about 12%. For the rest of medicine, that's 88%. It doesn't work, and it's actually harmful. So we're going to start a series with Dr. Peter Gochi, one of the greatest, most respected scientists and medical doctors in the world, and some others will be joining. And I'll be doing little segments every day on this topic. Also, we're going to hear from a woman I interviewed in San Francisco. She was one of the top drug reps in all of America. And according to her, her lifestyle was terrific. Every year she could rent a new car. She had a gold or platinum credit card. She could stay in the best hotel. She could eat any place she wanted. Nothing was ever questioned because she was selling millions of dollars a year in pharmaceuticals to physicians. And it was how she did it, taking them out to dinner, bringing in lunches every day for the staff, and getting the confidence so that a doctor would suddenly be offering her anti-arthritis drug or her statin drug. And this is representing the full spectrum of all those charming, charismatic, attractive young men and women, dressed nicely, always with a smile, well-educated, that end up determining what your doctor, more often than not, prescribes for you or whether or not you even need a prescription. So that's what we're dealing with today. We begin with the latest on health and healing. And this is a study that shows why frequently you should use, and we're talking about organic, of course, the whole fruit. That would be particularly true when it comes to lemons, limes, grapefruits, and the seed, because the seed also contains caprylic acid, which is great for getting rid of parasites and other harmful bacteria in our intestine. But in this case, according to the University of Florida, a group of scientists led by Dr. Wang, a professor of food science and human nutrition, they were looking at the orange peel and the nutrients inside the orange peel to see if it could improve the gut's ability to prevent fatty linings from forming in the arteries. So just imagine this. What you eat can directly impact constructively or destructively if you have the trans fats and the saturated fatty acids like arachidonic acid from French fries, hot dogs, hamburgers, pizzas, and that causes the arteries to clog and then bad bacteria to form in the intestine. On the other hand, just the opposite is true. Having healthy plant-based foods creates good bacteria, and that good bacteria can also mitigate what happens in the linings of your arteries to keep them from clogging. Now, we've seen hundreds of quality studies proving that gut microbiota, that's the good bacteria, has a surprising role in the maintenance of heart health, specifically on the development of cardiovascular diseases. When the body breaks down certain nutrients like choline and carnitine, both of which are found in high-fat dairy products and eggs and red meat, the process produces what is called TMAO, that's trimethylamine in oxide, as a byproduct. And according to researchers from the Cleveland Clinic, high levels of TMAO could indicate further cardiovascular disease, including heart attacks and strokes. And because of this, the researchers wanted to observe how orange peels could affect gut health and turn overall human health. And that's what they did. Now, by the way, the United States generates about 5 million tons of orange peels a year, most of which is simply thrown away as waste. And the scientist says, hold on a second. The natural orange peel extracts are safe for human consumption, but also enhance the cardioprotection or cardiovascular health of millions of people worldwide. So why not use it for that? And that's what this study showed. So what's the takeaway message for you listening right now? Well, why not try doing this? And this would be a little novelty. You've heard me say that you should peel 4 organic apples and throw the peels in a blender because it's the peels that really are most beneficial. You can juice the rest. But if you juice the peel, almost 90% of that peel or more is going to go right out and be flushed out into the material that's non-digestible. So that's why you want the peel of the apple. What I would do with the orange peel is a little different. I would scoop out the orange, which you can eat or juice, and then I would take the peel and just put it into a food dehydrator. And everyone really should have a food dehydrator. They're not expensive. You can get a little countertop version, just like you can get a little hydroponic version to grow sprouts and microgreens in your kitchen. Doesn't take much space and doesn't take all that much time. But in the dehydrator, overnight it's drying out. Now the white pulp inside there you want to keep because that's rich in bioflavonoids and quercetin. Then you can sprinkle some cinnamon on there. And in the morning you have all these dried orange peels, which you can dice them up, put in some, I would say, anise, a cinnamon, or allspice. And they're not sweet, but they're not really bitter. They do have volatile oils, by the way, which are antibacterial and antiviral. And if you want something that's a low glycemic, you can sprinkle a little bit of coconut sugar on it. It is the only really healthy sugar as such. And that way you can throw those around in your daily eating pattern as a snack. And that way you're getting the benefit of what's in the orange peel. Just something to think about. Or you can just juice the whole orange. I'm a big believer we're not getting enough magnesium. And it's not based upon a guess. When I've seen tens of thousands of individuals to counsel them, or in clinical studies see their actual blood work up, I'm looking at low magnesium across the board. First of all, I believe that the dietitians who originally founded how much magnesium to calcium were completely wrong. It should be equal calcium-magnesium, or a little more magnesium than calcium, because magnesium is far more versatile mineral. It's the most important mineral in your body. But Brown University Medical School published an article in the Journal of Women's Health that showed that higher magnesium intake reduced the risk of death by heart disease in women. This is a new prospective study based upon data from the Women's Health Initiative. So there's an inverse association. The more magnesium you take, the less fatal heart attacks you're going to have, especially in postmenopausal women. That's important. From University of Texas Southwestern comes a study about the plant-rich diet protects mice against foodborne infections. Quite simply, mice fed a plant-rich diet are less susceptible to gastrointestinal infection from a pathogen such as the one currently under investigation for widespread E. coli outbreaks tied to romaine lettuce. So it's important to know what can help us. Also, from Kangwon National University in South Korea, yoga as a primary relief against menstrual cramps. So yoga, we know, can help you with meditation, with breathing, with relaxing, with de-stressing, stretching your muscles, making you more limber, better balance. But now we can add, could dramatically ease or put an end to period pain. That's what the new study reveals, that curling up in a ball not only floods your system with feel-good hormones and improves circulation, but also provides relief for common menstrual complaints. Now, I had seen references on how why dogs and cats like to curl up in a ball, and because, again, it's something primal. It's when they're most vulnerable. It is also when they're most, they're most secure, and that releases the endorphins. But it also works for humans, especially for those people suffering from dysmenorrhea. If you don't know, dysmenorrhea is problems with periods, which is cramping pain that occurs in the lower abdomen just before or during menstruation. And so now we can say that a 30-minute session of yoga twice a week for 12 weeks in this study was able to substantially reduce the amount of period pain. So that's good, something else that can help people. From the University of Gdansk in Poland comes a study about the Western diet, that's our diet, on mice brain lipid composition. Now, this is very technical, so I'm going to break it down. According to the news reporting out of the university, the appropriate fatty acids composition of brain lipids is critical for functioning of the brain. The alterations of brain fatty acid composition can lead to neurological and neurodegenerative disorders. So the brain has a lot of fat in it, by the way, but it is the fat that we add from our diet that is not healthy. The fat that the EPA fats, the trans fats, and many of the saturated fats from our processed foods. So if you go back to healthy fats like an avocado, almonds and walnuts, and also you'll get good fats in flaxseed. When you're eating a diet that is good plant-based, you're going to get a combination of fats. And coconut is very good fat. Those are all good for the brain. The fats like canola oil, peanut oil, cottonseed oil, safflower oil, all highly processed, they're not good for the brain. And the fats from animal proteins are very bad because they're highly inflammatory. From Chung-Chan Medical University in Taiwan, published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine, comes a study about the lotus seed pods found to protect the liver from inflammation. Well, wow, we have a lot of people suffering from non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, cirrhosis of the liver, hepatitis, infections, inflammation of the liver, scarring in the liver. So this would be beneficial for them. And it's It's simply using the lotus seeds to turn off inflammation, specifically in the hepatic organ, the liver. Anything that you can do that is able to turn off inflammation in any organ is good. And the lotus seeds are rich in antioxidants, and that's what provides the protection to the liver. Also from Western University, which is in Canada, comes a study about how even a 10-minute one-time burst of exercise can measurably boost your brain power, at least temporarily. And while other studies have shown brain health benefits after 20 minutes of a single bout of exercise, they also found that exercise programs of a shorter duration, 10 minutes, of aerobic activity, but really strong aerobic activity, intense, also has measurable benefits. So that's good. And I think one last one about smartphones, and this is from Korean University in South Korea. There's growing concern, as there should be, that smartphone addiction is causing depression and anxiety. And many scientists and integrative healthcare providers clearly warn us that these frequency vibrations alter brain waves. And any time you're altering a brain wave, it can impact your emotional well-being. And that's what this data showed. And it was presented at the Radiological Society of North America. While the papers on the overuse of smartphones and the internet is creating chemical imbalance in the brain that leads to anxiety and depression. And this was an important study for all of us. We're just using too much of the computers, too much of the cell phones. That's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a brief break. We'll be right back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall. By the way, with all the articles, 71 articles and 12 letters sent to Wikipedia, and the latest yesterday, why we should walk away from Wikipedia, what we have done is methodically and with deep scholarship, we have taken everything that they say they represent, all their own rules and to abide by, and show that they're doing just the opposite, and they know it. And that means malice. So I'm asking people to download from PRN.fm the articles and share them with your legislator. The only way this is going to stop is if we have congressional hearings where Jimmy Wells and all of his board of directors and his officers and his administrators are brought in under oath and then questioned about why is it that you say that no one with a bias is allowed to edit a page, and if there's any bias, the page has to be completely deleted, and yet just the opposite. The more bias you have, the more hateful you are, the more destructive is your temperament towards a person or a field, all on complementary and alternative medicine, or a person's political views, you have carte blanche to destroy them with impunity. Because that means that there's an opportunity for we the people to tell our legislators to vacate the law, the Communications Decency Act, that prevents them from being sued, because we will sue them into oblivion. We're going to do that anyhow. But then we intend to go after all those editors. We have a team of lawyers, and we're also going to be exposing the backgrounds of all of their board of directors, all their lawyers. How about that? I've just dictated a letter to my lawyer, to the lawyer defending Wikipedia, and we're going into every lawyer's background. Boy, they're not going to like the door that they just opened. But they opened it, and now we're marching through. And they've dealt with Silicon Valley people. You've never dealt with people like me. I'm not angry, but I'm focused. And if I have to spend the rest of my life exposing you, I will. I'm never deterred by threats. I'm never deterred because I'm not a coward. I'm not afraid of anyone or anything. I'm not afraid of the FBI. That's why I take them on. Or the CIA, or the New York Times, or the punks at the Washington Post. Well, that really is punks for everyone. The government, everyone's my enemy in the public sphere when it comes to authority figures. I trust none of them because they're all pathological in their personalities, and they're lying in contempt for the truth, the Constitution, Bill of Rights, and we the people. They don't care about animals. They don't care about the environment. They don't care about you. They don't care. You are a profit stream. And if you're not smart enough to figure that out by now, then you are a willing Stockholm victim. So kiss the feet of the people who are going to put that foot right through your ass, because that's what's going to happen to you. But we don't care. We don't protest. We don't demonstrate. We don't write our legislators. We don't, unless it's something about our own union or personal interest, we just don't care about each other anymore. What happened to us? What happened to caring about the poor and caring about the homeless and caring about the working class and caring about unions and caring about students and not having debt and caring about the environment and our degradation of it and the military-industrial complex? What happened to our capacity to act like human beings? What happened? I'm interested in your response. Give me a talk back right now. Here's my number, 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear your thoughts. What has happened in America that means that we don't protest anything, ever? We just don't. Is why? Are we disconnected at a spiritual level, humanistic level? Have we become so fearful? Are we in such pain? Or are we just self-absorbed, narcissistic? Why don't we care enough that all the professors and teachers protest so that they get all student debt reduced and eliminated? Look, all it takes is 3.5% of any movement to cause a shift in the major overarching paradigm. But there's no protest. If right now you took every student, 41 million, who are behind in their debt payments and therefore paying compounding interest, which means that by the time they die as a student today, they will not pay off their student debt, and 40% of that money goes to the government. Why haven't you organized and protested? You could get that stopped immediately, especially those of you who are voters. We haven't. Why do we have to have a 16-year-old girl from Sweden who's been completely manipulated come over and remind us that the environment counts and we have to stop lying about our complicity? Why do we have to remind ourselves that we should act in a civil way and care about each other? Why? I'm interested. Let's see what you have to say. 888-874-4888. While you're thinking about that, we're going to hear from a man who, when I first interviewed him years ago, this was completely opposite of what he had to say. He defended orthodoxy completely because he was a member of it. Not just a member. He was one of those unique people at the very top of the medical industrial complex in his country and in Europe. Dr. Peter Goetze. That's G-O-T-Z-S-H-E. G-O-T-Z-S-C-H-E. Now listen to him. I'm going to play a clip. It's only 7 minutes long. And you can watch this clip, by the way, by going to youtube.com/PRNFM. And oh, by the way, it's now turned out that Merck has its own apparatus for trying to go after and attack anyone that challenges it. Is this the same Merck that produced the MMR vaccine? Yes. So we should believe them? Is this the same Merck that gave us Vioxx, which killed a minimum of 50,000 Americans and caused heart attacks and strokes, another 150,000? Yeah. And they knew about it? Yes. And a Dr. Graham at the FDA showed that they knew absolutely that it would increase, but they knew they would make billions? Yeah. So how is it then our cognitive disconnect that we can say shame on you, no one goes to jail, no one is fined, or no one is fired, you get a raise actually, the stock goes up, but you've just killed an awful lot of Americans. More Americans were killed by Vioxx than all of the casualties in 10 years of the Vietnam War. No responsibility. And yet we're supposed to believe that you're a completely different Merck that made the MMR vaccine. How do we wrap our mind around that contradiction? So I'm interested in what you have to say. Here's Dr. Peter Goetsche.
My name is Peter Goetsche. I'm a director of the Nordic Cochrane Center in Copenhagen and professor of research design and analysis at the University of Copenhagen. 2 years ago, I found out that our prescription drugs are the third leading cause of death after heart disease and cancer. Our drugs kill around 200,000 people in America every year, and half of these people die while they do what their doctors told them. So they die because of the side effects. The other half die because of errors. And it's often the doctors that make the errors, because any drug may come with 20, 30, or 40 warnings, contraindications, precautions, and so on. No doctor in the world knows about all this. So they give patients drugs that they should not have given them, that interact dangerously with other drugs or food items or so on. And then the patients die. That's the other half. So the other thing I found out 2 years ago was that much of what the drug industry does fulfills the criteria for organized crime in US law. And they behave in many ways like the mafia does. They corrupt everyone they can corrupt. They have bought every type of person, even including ministers of health in some countries. So there is a huge amount of corruption. In my country, for example, Denmark, we are regarded as having very little corruption. But yet we have thousands of doctors on industry payroll, although we are just 20,000 doctors. So this is an effective kind of corruption. The drug industry buys the professors first, then chiefs of department, then other chief physicians and so on. They don't buy junior doctors. So when several thousands are on industry payroll, it's really, really bad. And that's why I wrote my book, Deadly Medicines and Organized Crime, How Big Pharma Has Corrupted Healthcare. I hope to convince patients not to take so many drugs, because so many die from the drugs they take. In my country, people take so many drugs that every single citizen can be in treatment with 1.5 drugs from they are born till they die. This is incredible. And drugs are not that helpful. And they kill very many of us. We know that. That's why drugs are the third major killer after heart disease and cancer. So what we need in the coming years is to take far fewer drugs than what we do currently. If we did that and we were careful, then we could live longer and live better lives. Because drugs have many side effects, and patients often don't realize that when they become worse, that it could be a side effect of the drug, which they continue taking because that's what their doctors tell them. So when I was a specialist in internal medicine, what I very often did was that I stopped a lot of drugs, particularly in elderly people, and it's quite revealing to see a bedridden elderly person come into your ward, and when you stop the drugs, I mean, that person becomes many years younger. Many of these drugs affect the brain, and old people tolerate that very, very badly. They fall, and when they break a hip, a quarter of them die. And for example, antidepressant drugs are used in more than 10% of our elderly. They seem to kill 3% of them every year. I mean, if 100 old people take an antidepressant for 1 year, 3% of them will die because they fall and break their hip. This is a huge death rate. So a lot of other drugs and antidepressants also make people fall and kill them. and they may affect your cognition, your memory, and all these things. And then they interact in ways that we know almost nothing about. Very many elderly, they take more than 5 drugs a day, and we actually don't know how these drugs interact with each other. What we do know is that all drugs have many effects in the body, and some of them interact also in their metabolism, so that you can get a too high concentration of a drug if you take other drugs simultaneously. So we make a lot of harms that we don't even recognize. I have a pretty colorful collection of things people have called me during all these years. And sometimes journalists have asked me, why do you always look up controversy? And my reply is, I don't. Controversy looks me up. Because it's not popular to tell the truth in healthcare. You will get a lot of enemies. Because a lot of people make money on false premises. Doctors and industry alike. And our drug regulators and our politicians, they are on board on this wagon. So very few people are independent of money in healthcare. And of course, I have attacked a lot of holy cows during my career, and people have screamed loudly. In a French journal, I was called a statistical masturbist because I showed with statistics that mammography screening didn't work and things like that. And I was even accused of scientific misconduct by the Association of the Danish Pharmaceutical Industry, which was completely ludicrous. It was harassment from beginning to end. They came with vague arguments that we cannot recognize the conclusions in your study. And they could have come up with numbers and said, these numbers are wrong. They didn't do anything. It was only harassment. It lasted 18 months, I think, the whole thing. And then when we were acquitted, I made sure that this nasty behavior was described in the British Medical Journal. So after that, they haven't come so much after me, the Danish drug industry. And when my book about organized crime came out, they just lied about it, as they always do, that my examples were old, they went back 90 years and so on. But, you know, where I demonstrate that what the 10 biggest companies do is organized crime, these examples, they were from within the last 10 to 15 years. That's not old examples. And the crimes have increased because when crime pays, you will have more crime. That's how capitalism works.
Good. More from him on upcoming programs. But I wanted to hear what you had to say about why we've lost our capacity to challenge corruption, challenge crimes against humanity, including our own military-industrial complex, every president since Dwight Eisenhower, including, by the way, especially a president I just loathe, and that is Harry Truman. But why have we not taken to the streets or even showed our contempt for how we're being treated? Why? I'm interested in your calls. And they're coming in now, 888-874-4888. Let's start with Nick from New Jersey. Nick, your turn. You're on the air.
You know, your guest, the tape you just played just totally distracted me. Like, it reminds me of Dr. Wallach, who comes on at night on Coast to Coast. And, you know, his book, you should have him, in fact. His book is called Dead Doctors Don't Lie. He found the average age of doctors who were supposed to be advising people to be 58. So to get to the point at hand, honestly, it's mind control. We've been conditioned to respond to distractions that are irrelevant to the things that are most important to us. And somebody said, so the guy, I'm a volunteer for BAI, and one of the guy had a show called A 5 o'clock Shadow. You know what he said? And this is the danger of 5G. He said cell phones function on the same main frequencies as brain waves. My mouth fell open. This was a couple of years ago before he all of a sudden died. And so we're so busy being busy, and we've also resigned to the fact that there's nothing you can do. And that's the last thing any one of us should ever say, because you can do things, you know, we're in spiritual warfare. That's what this is. And a lot of people are responding on the physical plane. Spiritual warfare is not fought on the physical plane. It's fought on the spiritual plane, and it's fought on the mental plane. The thoughts you entertain, what you allow to get into your psyche and dominate your orientation is where we go wrong. So I've come up with a short saying, and it's going to offend a lot of people, but I guess you've gone way past that today. Smartphones make dumb drones. Because if you're looking to the phone for everything and you're Googling everything, you're not thinking. You're not tuning into thoughts. In fact, we need more events where we come together. I tell people, I'm not on Facebook. I'm totally off. I don't have Twitter. I'm just too busy. My mind is busy connecting with other minds. And that's what the enemy don't want. Trust me, we got enemies. Just because you don't see them don't mean that they ain't there. You know, the whole existentialism thing. The tree falls. Well, of course it fell. And if you were under it, you'd be smashed, you know, whether you hear it or not. So honestly, mind control is very pervasive. And there are ways to tell. We can get into this later. But if you happen to be thinking of one particular thing today and something devious and mischievous comes into your mind, that's not your thought. And you have to challenge it. And in my community, we were taught that. But
let's dissect a few of the things you've said, and thank you for calling in on this. On the one hand, I don't use the word mind control. It's too existential. Instead, I use propaganda. That's something that we can understand. Edward Bernay, the father of convincing us to buy things we don't need, to spend money we don't have, and then feel that our happiness comes as an extension of what we control, and that means what we can control in our immediate micro-environment. So if I feel I'm going to be a better person or happier person by having a new couch or a new car or a new partner, that's not anything that I came to of my own volition, because about 97% of all of our thoughts each day come from our epigenetic or conditioned self. And that can go back at least 7 generations. Some have said 15 generations, but the science shows about 7 generations. So whatever your parents and grandparents and great-grandparents, how they dealt with life, how they dealt with the crisis in their life and their relationships, that is in your gene. Now, it doesn't mean you're automatically going to revert to that, but it's there. And then when you're not conditioning yourself, you're then under the influence of someone else's conditioning. And therefore, we have to vote Democrat or Republican. No, we don't. That's all conditioning. It's all propaganda. I have a saying that is, before you think, ask who or what manufactures your thoughts. That segues into what you had discussed, that I'm assuming you're a person within a minority community because you said our community. You never hear that said within the Caucasian community. So if my assumption is correct, think of how, at the height of the civil rights movement, you only had about 2% of African Americans actively participating in it. That's conditioning. You can have cultural conditioning, religious conditioning, institutional conditioning. You can have educational conditioning. There's at least 20 different types of conditionings that we go through in order to be accepted and survive or even thrive within the limits of a given paradigm. Have you ever noticed that every major corporation succeeds by selecting and then over a period of years nurturing the corporate culture? Now, the corporate culture is different than a normal tribal culture in that the corporate culture makes very clear the success and thriving of the corporation and financial support and rewarding for their investors, their shareholders, is your number one priority. Whether you're doing it with a crappy product, a dangerous product, a lethal product, is irrelevant, because in today's world, you can always pay a fine, which is a small fraction of the income you have. You don't have to surrender your ill-gotten gains, and you get to keep the rewards. And hence, you will be rewarded. And as a person said, that he was the messenger before the jackal. And he said he would go into a country. He gave us names and country and dates. He would go in, and he would sit with a president of a country, democratically elected Rios, for example. And he would say, we need to open this country of yours up to its exploitation of its natural resources, whatever it might be, bauxite in Jamaica, whatever it is. But in return, you have to make sure that there's no interference, no government regulations, no unions, no demonstrations. You have to deal with that. That means you're going to have to bring people in from your internal security forces, your police departments, to make sure if there's a union agitator, if there's an environmental agitator, if there's a human rights agitator, you have to see they're dealt with. Dealt with, it means eliminate with extreme prejudice. That's a sentence from describing how Charlie Sheen's or Martin Sheen's character in Apocalypse Now was supposed to kill the crazy colonel played by Marlon Brando. And that's the first time we'd heard that, is dealing with someone as if they're no longer, you're not going to go kill them, you're going to eliminate with extreme prejudice. So we live through metaphors. You know, the war on, we invade countries based upon bringing peace, democracy, and freedom. Well, by that measure, we have not succeeded once. We have failed miserably because we bring war, damage, destruction, enslavement, and the annihilation of their health using depleted uranium and completely usurping all of the traditions of people, whether it's in Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, or Yemen now, and Libya. But we're taught, use these four words, and you'll hear everyone in the media using those same four words. That's how you all then get a collective indoctrination. So if everyone is collectively manufacturing consent, then you have to ask, how do I, as a person independent or part of a group, respond to others when they discount or deny my reality, our common reality? So let me give you an example of that. Barack Obama, in my opinion, was quite simply the most dangerous president in American history. Not the dumbest, one of the smartest intellectually, one of the most charismatic, one of the smoothest. And he exploited the African-American people, saying, I'm one of you. No, you don't live up on Martha's Vineyards in a $16 million estate, nor one in Georgetown or in Washington, D.C. in a $9 million estate, nor will you be making $1 billion. He'll be the first ex-president to ever be a billionaire. You will never get a $60 million book contract. No one has ever gotten a $60 million book contract. Look, I'm one of the best-selling authors in American history, the best-selling health author in American history. And I can tell you, you know, published by Doubleday and Random House and Dell and New American Library, my own imprint in many of these, like HarperCollins and now Skyhorse, you don't get those. No one gets them. No one ever gets them. There had to be a quid pro quo. But look back before this, and the publishing company that gave him that got a huge $100 million plus contract from the government. And suddenly, Barack Obama gets the biggest advance in world history, and there's no way in the world he'll ever sell enough books to make that money back. And they don't care. That's how it works. It all works this way. So we have to understand that these are the people, the policymakers and opinion leaders who run every major institution that has betrayed us, and they discount and deny our realities. They discount that every mother whose daughter or son is born with autism or damage or a defective immune system, that somehow it's genetic and not the vaccines. They encourage dysfunctional relationships. They don't want you to have a healthy relationship with other activists or other people who are fighting for social justice or human rights. They want you to have only a functional relationship with them. Stay in line, keep your mouth shut, and you'll be rewarded. Speak out, speak the truth, and you'll be attacked. So hence, we collectively, we project our powerlessness, and we then think that we're making a positive gesture when we're blaming someone or something for our, let's say, our suffering. And we shouldn't be in the blame game. We should be in the finding positive solution game. When Barack Obama had a chance to use the TARP money to bail out small businesses. The small business is the workhorse that employs more employees than all corporate major corporations combined. Not a penny went to them to help people get out from underneath their underwater loans. Not one was helped. Instead, all the money, and there are differences of figures. I've seen as low as $3 trillion, as high as $29 trillion. I believe it's closer to $21 trillion. Was given to the people that caused the problem. Since when do you give all of the reward to people who caused all the problems? Because that's the culture that continues to reward its own. That's the corporate culture. And the government is merely a subsidiary and of the corporate culture. I believe you made all those important statements in what you were saying, and I thank you for calling in. Now let's say hello to Gina from New York City. And Gina, your turn, you're on the air.
How are you, Gary? I just want to say I really appreciate your show. I've been a listener for a few years, and I try to listen and try to adopt many of your protocols and suggestions. I appreciate what the prior caller said as well. I think there is something about the cell phones influencing us and other things outside. But what I would like to add is that we've seen so many instances where people who protested were killed, and maimed, you know, famous people, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, people who really took a stand. And even you said on your show at times that they can recognize in the crowd who's in the crowd and so forth. So I would say that people are afraid. Sometimes I am too. People are afraid of protesting. Now, I'm not going to say I don't protest. I'm not, because I'd be lying. I'm not going to say I don't withdraw using certain things. I would be lying because, you know, I do protest. But something that goes through my mind at times is reprisal. But, you know, I do step out and protest and try to speak to people as well. And I do.
Good for you.
But, you know, I just want to say that there's, thank you, and but there is that fear. There is that
Gina,
fear.
Gina, let's focus on that. You are absolutely correct. None of us get through life unscathed, unchallenged, and without suffering a lot of pain along the way. Some self-induced because of our reckless and stupid and selfish behavior at different times in life. Others because we trusted the wrong people, we trusted the wrong information, and we acted upon it, and we shouldn't have. There's nothing worse than someone sitting in a hospice realizing that every single thing their doctor said to do, they did it exactly. The foods they were told to eat, they did it exactly. The people to vote for, they did it. They were the good citizen. They backed through life. They did not do what Thoreau said. Either be a good person or a good citizen. You cannot be both. They were good citizens. And as a result, they are now suffering in hospice cares, but those same doctors, the hospitals, the administrators of the hospitals, the board of directors of those private hospitals for profit, the chemotherapy makers that sold their chemotherapy at wholesale to the oncologists who sold it to you for retail, not a single person is in the hospice care with you, either to say goodbye, to help you in your transition, or to comfort you. They'll bring in a cat sometime, and a few of the, and I mean only a few, most of these are just dumping pits before a person is buried. They're terrible. But I have spent enough time with people in hospice care and nurses in hospice care. The final thing people say before they die, as if they have to wait till there's no one who can contradict them or challenge them, is, I should have done it differently. So I don't want people to wait until they see that so much of the conditioned response to our everyday life, from the curriculum in schools to how it's taught, to the peer pressures, to the identity politics, to all the things that will influence us, end up making us feel so fearful, not of the government initially, but fearful of being wrong, fearful of failing, fearful of being judged, fearful of showing any part of ourself that's vulnerable or is incomplete. And as a result, we have to look back and say, how significant are the things we have worked so hard to attain once we have achieved them? Do we feel full or empty once we no longer have something in our life, like love or money or success or material possessions or entitlements? And the answer is, yeah. So much of what we do that gets us what we think will give us security and not fear only makes us more fearful, because we see it's like candy cotton. It might smell interesting and taste good, but it's empty. It's just vacuous. And that's why so many people are so frustrated. On the other hand, what you said has another side to it. I was speaking with a journalist who had bombshell information on the Clintons, and he was very excited to come on my program and share it, and he was going to do an article. And 2 days later, he supposedly committed suicide up in Moundsville, West Virginia. This is a person that was not in a position to do suicide. Also, a good friend of mine, Gary Webb, supposedly shot himself twice in the head, committed suicide. I knew Gary. I knew him very well. I was the only guy who would have him on the radio for years. I got him, his publisher. That was my publisher. And he then won, because of his outstanding work, the Project Censored Book of the Year. And I went with him up at Columbia University when he celebrated that. No, we're never told the full story, but he exposed the CIA complicity in getting drugs into Southeast Los Angeles. But nobody wanted to acknowledge that. Who went against him? New York Times, Los Angeles Times. The mainstream media went against him. And that was his plight. There was another journalist who suddenly on a small street, his car went 90 miles an hour. And then he crashed. Yeah, he wasn't a drinker. He wasn't doing drugs. Do you realize that they can now control your engine, your brakes, your doors, your acceleration in your car? They recently gave me a notice they were going to upgrade my car. I have a little four-cylinder car. I said, no. They said, well, then you won't have radio. I said, I don't care. I don't know what you're putting in here. The last thing I want is for someone to say, oh, did you hear about Gary and all? Yeah. For some reason, he just decided to commit suicide, and he was driving down a highway at 120 miles an hour. And no, that ain't going to happen. But just understand, the fears are real. It was just exposed yesterday that the Canadian Mounted Police actually was planning on shooting and killing Native demonstrators on their own land over gas pipelines. Yeah, just came out. It also showed the FBI had snipers on buildings following the Occupy Wall Street group, and every single Occupy Wall Street group in the country had infiltrators in. These are real. Every demonstrator in a country has been identified, whether you're demonstrating against the war, of the environment, for peace. It doesn't matter what you demonstrate. The government now considers you an enemy of the state. And the corporate interests control the government and its intelligence agencies. The deep state controls its pawns in the CIA and national security. So your concerns are legitimate. It doesn't mean we should stop. It just means we should be smart. Let's say hello to, we have Phil from Fidel.
What a great segue, because I was one of the many supporters of Occupy Wall Street. At the time, I had a little restaurant on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and every night before I closed, I would take food down to the occupiers. And unbeknownst to me, a few months later, one of my merchants called me and said, Fidel, we cannot deposit money into your bank account because your bank account won't allow us. So I had all this money that I was swiping through my credit cards, totaling more than $5,000 that my bank was not allowing. And they went through it as the guise that, since I'm Cuban born, they flagged me because of the axis of evil with Cuba. So this is an awesome segue. Furthermore, I am now embroiled in a battle with Hudson County Prosecutor's Office. And the lengths they go through to get you to shut up is nothing short of corruption. But I wanted to say that I think that the reason, just surveying what's around me, that people are bamboozled, if you will, into not doing anything is because the very people, I live in a mainly African-American community, the very people that go around saying that they're there providing services for the African-American community are working hand in glove with the administration that wants to keep them down, with the corporations that want to keep them down. So the charlatans are among the people themselves. And the city also turns around and hires a quota of African-American people who then go out into the community and sing the tune of the city, knowing full well that the city is pushing people who are long-term residents, who have deep roots in these communities, they're pushing them out. Yet you hear them talking about how good this administration is, and I'm talking about the Phillip administration, let me be clear, and how wonderful it is, and they erect these signs, and I sit back and I say, isn't that something? These people know full well that these other people that are living amongst them are in pain because they can't find jobs, they don't have any hope, they can't find any kind of resources, right, to better themselves, not that they're asking for handouts, but just to better themselves. And here they are doing the bidding for the administration. So not only does it work at the corporate level, but it works at the ground level, if you will, when these people get hired by these cities who try to mirror Michael Bloomberg, for instance. I asked the mayor once why he didn't implement impact fees to the big developers so that instead of us getting left with the bag of repairing our streets and our infrastructure after these big rigs come and tear the streets up, he said, well, you know, Columbia University. And I said, sir, Columbia University, do you realize that they have bought up the whole Upper West Side and have driven the rents up? And this guy was just oblivious, or he was trying to act oblivious to what it was that I was telling him about Columbia.
Well, understand, when you're worth $47 billion, more or less, at Michael Bloomberg, and you live in one of the most prestigious neighborhoods and one of the most beautiful private brownstones, and everything in your life is in a bubble, you can be indifferent and without any repercussions. And it's to us to say no more of these people should be elected to any office. They haven't deserved the right to be there. Thank you very much for your calls. I really appreciate it. I'll get to my commentaries tomorrow. You all have a nice day. I'll be back here tomorrow at noon, holiday or not. Have a nice day, everyone.
What's it all about, Alfie? Is it just for the moment we live? What's it?